continuing?
They are not continuing the same way because you don't have the same military footprint. So I don't think there are isolated special forces units living on remote fire bases like you had at the time. But definitely there's still extensive U.S. military involvement in the war. You just had two special forces members were killed in Helmand province last week in a friendly fire incident because they were trying to, you know, fight the Taliban, which again is not really what the authorization for President Obama's current troop deployments are supposed to be, training a mission and going after al-Qaeda. But it's clear that 15 years in, the U.S. is still fighting a war in Afghanistan.
Award-winning journalist Matt Akins. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Yes, that sound that you heard in the background means that Jim Hightower is going to have some special commentaries for us a little bit later on. But our great show for today, they're all great, aren't they? About Dearborn, what's going on, important ideas and events, and, of course, in the surrounding area, too. But our special guest today on the show is Henry Ford College President, Dr. Stan Jensen. So welcome, Dr. Jensen.
Good to be here, Jay, and thank you so much for the opportunity to be on the show.
And, yes, you were almost also doing an introduction for John Conroy. John Conroy is our WHFR news director, and he joins me today back from a little trip out of town there, just
yes.
Like I was last week. So,
yep.
So welcome back, John. And
thank you, Jay.
Here we are with the man that knows everything about Henry Ford College, and of course, why is this important to our listeners in this area? Well, of course, some of your tax dollars pays for Henry Ford College, and because of that, you get many benefits in terms of reduced tuition. The senior.
Yeah,
Dearborn senior tuition discount or free senior tuition is still in place, isn't
it? That's right. So if you're over 60, I think it is, you can come here, take a class for nothing. And another one of our services that a lot of our listeners may be interested in.
Yeah, I haven't heard it mentioned for a lot of years. I'm sure it loses money for the college a little bit, but I think that's a great thing. It actually started like 25 years ago or something.
It's still going. I talked about it at Rotary the other day and try to get it out there. And so it's still very much a part of our college.
Doesn't pay for books, though.
No, it doesn't pay for books.
Darn it. Yeah. Books are so expensive now. Some of the texts in the college store, I mean, in my day, we thought texts were expensive if they were $20 or $30 each, and now the average book is averaging about $100 each or so.
Yeah.
So waiting for all those books to go online for free, but not yet. Well, okay, what's the first question, John?
Yes, well, welcome, President Jensen.
Thanks, John.
We've had you here before, and it's always been a delightful experience. Just since becoming the president of Henry Ford, what has been your proudest moment or achievement, one of the two?
You know, I think I get extremely excited about student achievement, student success, and that's what we're all about. And it's not one of the most glitzy things, but it is core as far as success. And a great hats off to our academic side of the house and our faculty and staff and Dr. Pierner and others that have really worked hard on two areas. We've had CPI teams, we call them, the continuous process and continuous process improvement teams work on this, which is what I lead those and train the people in them. We've had 28 of those teams already, but a couple of them worked on some of our barrier courses, and usually across the nation, those are in math and also in English. And so, and what I mean by barrier, it just stops people from getting into college or graduating because they can't pass the algebra or they can't pass some kind of English. And we have, through a number of efforts, some in creative scheduling, some in collaborative work with developmental education as well as the four credit classes, really made big strides in a pilot project to help students become more successful in those classes. In some one area, it's success rates have gone up about 50%. And so this is huge as far as the future and what's happening. I'm very excited about guided pathways, which is another thing that doesn't get a lot of press yet, but we'll get into this full time next year as far as, just like it sounds, helping our students be guided in a pathway that leads to a degree or certificate or a degree and to transfer. And so they don't waste any time, they don't waste any money, they don't waste effort, and can get a better life because they can get a better job and because they have more skills. So those are some of the things. And of course, one other one that goes with that is, you know, the huge turnaround as far as the finances. But, you know, we've had about a $25 million turnaround in the first 2 years. So that's that helps us do the things we just were talking about by way of student success.
Gives you more access, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. Now, also, with the process improvements, the students that are going on to four-year colleges after they go here, have you had any follow-up with them as far as their successes in a four-year school?
You know, yeah, we have stories all the time, anecdotal and, you know, individual stories. If I could, I'll just try to really briefly tell you about one that I shared during opening day here a couple weeks ago as far as state of the college address, and it's a personal one for my wife and myself. There's a student that walked in my office in the first few months I was here and told me about his situation, needed money in order to continue in college and those kind of things. So we have revamped a lot of our scholarships now, and they're very, very effective. At that point, they weren't as well organized. So I said, how about if my wife and I will support you as a full ride, which is only about $1,850, so a lot of us can do that, and we'll pay your tuition and for the next semester. And so we did that. He was very appreciative. I got a nice thank you letter from him, and then I hadn't heard from him until just a few weeks ago. I walked in my office, and he said, well, I've graduated from University of Michigan Ann Arbor since I talked to you last. I'm going into med school.
Wow.
I want you to walk with me in the white coat kind of ceremony. And I said, wow, you know, my wife and I are so glad to be a small part of your success and what you're doing. Congratulations. He grabbed my arm. He said, no, I want you to know that made all the difference. It wasn't a small thing. And so I know that we have faculty and staff and individuals in our community that do that kind of thing and even more.
That's
but
correct.
That makes a big difference.
Sure, it does. That you get the recognition of that student, he's just going to pass that on to so many others as well.
So he is, you know, he has been very successful at University of Michigan. He'll continue to do that in med school and make a huge difference in his own life and in his family's life.
Fantastic.
I thought in terms of the scholarship help, too, that our development office has, thanks to new computer software and reorganization, right, more personnel added to help, that we're processing those applications so well that it was a very high percentage that are actually able to qualify and to get a scholarship, too. Now, it's thanks to all the money we've raised, too, and
that's
the
right.
Great donors.
Yes.
But before, it was kind of difficult to figure out who qualified for what.
It was a paper system, very difficult to follow, and but now it's all online, and it automatically helps us, it automatically connects a student with possible, more than one usually, possible scholarships. And so now we're awarding, I think it's 94 or 96% of the scholarships every year, was before it was only about 60 or 70%, and much more effective. We're also starting donor appreciation dinners and, you know, coffees and those kind of things to connect people, just like my wife and I were able to do with the people that they're helping. And there's nothing quite like that. And then I think they can give the encouragement talk now you're our student. Don't let us down here, you know. And you know, that is also important.
Oh, very good. Yep.
Yeah, pass it along.
The follow up. Yes.
Give it
that.
Back.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And well, I think John's next question is going to have to do with these achievements. They were very significant in the process that just was completed again this year.
Right. The accreditation process. We have a new, it's a new name for the commission.
Yeah.
And it goes very well with HFC. It's called HLC.
Yeah, that's right.
And how has that commission worked out?
Right. The Higher Learning Commission is located in Chicago as its headquarters. And it used to be called North Central, which, you know, kind of they represented the North Central part of the United States. Mm-hmm. But actually it goes from Arizona and Colorado in the west clear to West Virginia.
Wow.
So it's the 19 states and more than what I would call the upper Midwest.
So they had to change the name because they were a lot more than just North Central.
So there's six of these regional accrediting associations. These are an oversimplification, but basically they're approved by and hired by the federal government, the Department of Education, to look at colleges in our case and see, are they giving a good value to students? Are they legitimate? Are they financially sound? Or are they going to be gone tomorrow? And of course, that leaves students hanging.
Yes.
And are they are their credits what we call transferable or accredited? There are some colleges that are non-accredited, and so their credits aren't worth, they don't transfer to the University of Michigan, for instance, or wherever you're going to go. And ours, of course, are accredited. They do transfer just about anywhere in the United States, and if they need to outside of the United States. So it is a way of a quality check. Mm-hmm. And so we did have our reaccreditation and this summer, and we are in a new system of accreditation, and one of the first colleges to go through it, and we were very successful. We met every one of the criteria. There are five basic criteria and other under each of those subcategories. We met every one of those, which is, it's not a very big word, just MET, but it's very meaningful. You can also get a score or a result of not met or not met with concerns, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So, you know, we didn't have any of that. Other colleges really actually real near us do have some of those on their record. We didn't have any. And so we're very excited. Does that mean that we have everything is just wonderful? No, we have a lot of things to continue to do. And so, and they mentioned, I went through it word by word, and I counted like 25 or 30 things that we still need to work on over the next number of years. So we'll do that. Things like doing a better job of assessment, assessing. How do you know you're doing well at what you're doing? So whether it's my office or this radio station or a classroom or a department or a program, they can all do assessment and just ask, how are we doing? How do the students think we're doing? How do the public think we're doing? How are the employers receiving our students and those kind of things? So that's what that's about. We've got a really pretty good plan in place now. We didn't have any 2 years ago when I got here, but that, and so they know that they need to come back and look at that, make sure it's giving the evidence that they need. And the new structure as far as leadership, they were very appreciative of that and thought that was on the right track, but we need to continue to mature that. So
it's hard to believe, but assessment itself has been continuing to grow and develop and
yes.
discover the appropriate ways to assess. Well, different programs too have different kinds of goals.
Right.
Some of them you can just maybe do a math test or something,
yeah,
but
yeah.
To see what how they do in calculations, but and that's too simplistic. But others, it's maybe an emotional commitment, or like if you're going into social work or even teaching, how do you judge the level of compassion for your students and the people you're trying to help? That's important. I guess that's the best word, compassion. You know, interpersonal skill that's required even for a doctor, you know, to in order to be successful, they have to make that connection with real people and be caring all the time. And that's really hard for assessment. I mean, when I started in 68 here, North Central accredited us, of course, but there really weren't any requirements for assessment for any colleges until I think the late 70s or something like that. At least I don't remember it here being stressed that much. And then how did we get started? Well, it was kind of left up to the individual colleges. Well, how do you think you should be assessed? I mean, you're doing this job, so and then it keeps evolving and right. getting better, more complicated. I think I heard that the document, that the overview document we presented to them in addition to all kinds of supplements,
right.
so 38,000 words?
Yeah, something like that. Wow. It's about a half inch thick. And so, yes, and it's much shorter than it used to be in one sense, but it also has all sorts of linkages, probably 1,000.
Electronic more. Documents yeah. can do
and
that,
so,
yeah.
yeah, and so that's good. It went really well, and we appreciate everybody's effort in the whole development of that. The accrediting team also had some really good things to say. They did say, you know, if we'd have been here 3 years ago, it might not have turned out this way
oh,
at
sure.
all.
Yeah.
But we made a lot of progress in the last couple of years thanks to a great teamwork around the college. And so I think that's paying off for our students. And they notice it as far as they were really the team that came here as five academic leaders from across the nation. And they were very complimentary about the process improvement teams and all that they have done. We had 28 of those, and the improvements that they have ignited and instituted.
I should say for our listeners that, and to my knowledge of what you just referenced, the Higher Learning Commission and the other regional accreditation societies are, at least with the final assessments, that's done by other academics from schools. So we're being right. assessed by our own kinds of people, although there's many different types that they appoint to these committees. I mean, big schools, little schools, and there's all kinds of points of view that that can come up in an accreditation group.
Yeah.
I'm sure that in Chicago they've got some office people.
Yes, they do.
Full time.
Been there.
But people should know that it's not the federal government and or quote unquote federal bureaucrats from Washington that are actually in this process. I mean, they're very concerned about it. They
oh, yeah.
want to, the results done. But it's very important, I think, that the people that know education are the ones that are helping to guide it and, in fact, guide others. It's a collaborative sort of thing, although done very professionally. But it's of course, oh so important. I mean,
yes.
you've got to be
yeah.
accredited or
yeah.
it's not worth doing almost.
Right. And this year, for the first time, there is a federal compliance piece of it.
Uh-huh.
And so we did yeah. go through that. We're one of the first colleges to go through that, got really good reviews and feedback on that. And the federal compliance piece is a lot like kind of a consumer look at a college. Like, is it really clear how much it costs? Is it really clear? How do you transfer? Mm-hmm. How do you get in? How do you know these things? So it's a consumer protection almost kind
yes.
of thing. And our legal staff internal to the college, which has just about been here a little over a year now, was very instrumental in helping us get that and get it done very, very well. And we had lots of good. So there are, for good or for ill, a lot more requirements of higher education than ever before in our history. And in one sense, I think that's good. In another sense, it sometimes gets really cumbersome. But we're also starting a balanced scorecard here and just started this week about that in earnest. And so that will give us even more measures.
Mm.
And so we can know before anybody else what is going well, what maybe we need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And not to blame anybody, but just to make it better. And the whole thing of constant improvement is key.
So the indexes are current and more up-to-date
yeah.
With those scores I'm thinking of as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also wanted to ask you.
John, let me just take
a
little break. I want
okay.
to remind our listeners who turned in late that this is the new WHFR Journal, and it is Friday, September 11th, 2015. Our special guest who is with us now for the next maybe 15 minutes or so is Dr. Stan Jensen, president of Henry Ford College. And we have, do you have another question, John?
Yeah.
Okay, because I got a couple too, so.
Okay.
Save some time for mine.
Sure.
Okay.
Of course. Little follow-up is that since accreditation has been happening and solvency has been there,
yeah.
are we attracting more corporate type of people to fund us and
yeah.
Help us along that route?
Right. The foundation is working well, and Reginald Best is one of my vice presidents, helps head up that along with a great foundation board. And so there's some great things coming ahead on that. I can't quite announce yet, but along that line, as far as fundraising to date, we are about three times more than last year mm-hmm. as far as income. We just got another $300,000 a week before last, so that was really good. And
yeah.
then this week has been a banner week on, I think, Wednesday. I think it was Wednesday, President Obama was near us here at Macomb, and he announced that day three different large grants, and one of those is ours, actually, a $4 million grant through what we call SEMCA, and it's a delivery system that's very much into apprenticeships. And so we wrote that one. And
oh, that's great.
Fantastic. So two of our leaders here, Dr. Pierner and Gary Sagansky, were primary writers on that one, and we did get that $4 million grant. And then the day after that, we got word from the Department of Labor. We got another $5 million grant from them, and this is a partnership with UAW and about apprenticeships and those kind of things. And we already have a $15 million grant from the the Department of Labor, and our college heads up both of these, and it's a multi-state kind of thing. So I built six teams with them, and the other presidents and other leaders in those colleges, I have them on a steering committee, which I lead. And so I think we're going to become really well-known for apprenticeships and the application to the workplace as far as lots of areas, all the way from nursing. Our nursing department, by the way, has new curriculum, and we have ticked up in pass rates significantly as far as national pass rates on the national test for nursing. We are the largest RN nursing program in the state with 240 graduates each year. And wow. So a lot that's just one example of a lot of other great things happening.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I wanted to be sure that we mentioned two things that have really come together. They began last year, but actually two programs for high school students that while they're in high school, they can be taking classes here at Henry Ford College, and it's both the early college is what one of them is called, and the other is Collegiate Academy?
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
The Henry Ford Early College is the one that you mentioned, John, and that's right. It's very, very successful. It's a great collaborative effort between the Henry Ford Health Systems and the P-12 school district here and our college, and it's right here in the middle of our campus. We just put a little over $1 million into it a year ago this past summer, and so it has several hundred students, and these students are primarily focused on healthcare careers. In fact, we had a graduate just a couple years ago at 19 years of age, graduated with both a high school diploma and a two-year associate's degree and an RN certificate and that kind of qualification, was hired at 19 years old with Henry Ford Medical Center and makes over $50,000. I was still costing my parents money at 19. And so
I was going to say, this is really a new definition for what is still around, I guess, the federal program that's called Head Start. But we're giving the high school students, and they're starting in their junior years, a real head start to get into college, a more seamless transition, not quite a shock. And they can still, again, this is just for Dearborn resident students now, but it's a wonderful, wonderful concept. And the Collegiate Academy allows the same sort of thing.
Five-year program.
But it's a...
They stay in their high school. They come here for college classes, their junior, senior, and super senior.
But it's not so specifically single career-oriented.
Right. No. Right. We are starting... we've just started this year, in fact, a new Henry Ford Early College called Henry Ford Early College Advanced Manufacturing Powered by Ford. And so it's obviously focused now, instead of on healthcare, on advanced manufacturing, so that will double the size of these things over the years.
Ford wanted that phrase in there, right?
They Powered did, yeah. Ford. Well, it's okay. Yeah, it's they're it's where they were born.
We get the money and we get the connections. That's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. And
as long as they don't want their name. Well, they already have their name.
Oh, Henry Ford College.
So that's forgot about that. Yeah.
So, but then of course, all this is under the kind of the umbrella of dual credit. So the dual credit, just like it sounds, is you're getting credit for high school requirements as well as college credits. And we are, one thing I wanted to really mention, just a couple weeks ago, the Henry Ford Early College was recognized nationally in the top 500 of high schools. And so they start here on our campus in ninth grade and go through 5 years, actually, and graduate with those two degrees, a high school diploma and associate's degree. And we were ranked in the top 500 at position 124 nationally by Newsweek. Mm-hmm. And but we're also in Michigan. We are the highest ranked public high school in southeastern Michigan. And so that's a great accomplishment, and hats off to all the teachers and administrators that are part of that program, and, of course, the students.
The students who enter these two programs in high school, they do have to meet some minimum requirements. They need to be at, like, the 9th or 10th grade level with their reading, writing, math, and other skills, because they can't jump into and even slowly jump into college work unless those skills are already together.
The Henry Ford Early College isn't an elite cream of the crop group. Nothing against them. No, I'm not saying that, but they aren't. They don't have the highest scores and all those kind of things. You're right. They have some minimum requirements, but they don't have really much requirements. So they could be not the greatest academic students. And they often, and that's one thing about this ranking, is we had some of the poorest social economic students in the nation, but yet almost 100% graduation rate, and they are getting 2 degrees. All this for no money from their pocket or from their parents' pocket, either for tuition or books. And so this is, I think, that's a wave great. Of the future. Same thing with the Collegiate Academy; it's free, if you will, for the parents and for the students, and it is paid for by the state of Michigan through the through the high school allowance that are given to those.
If they wanted more information, if parents of Dearborn High School students are interested, or the students are listening and are interested, thank you for listening to WHFR-FM. They can talk to their high school counselors, perhaps. There's more information on our website, hocc.edu.
Yep.
And I know that we're having what's called a Discover Day on October 1st. That's a Thursday. I think there's going to be in the morning from 11 to 1, and then from 5 to 7 in the evening. Chad Austin, our placement director, was one of our forum shows this last Tuesday, which is podcast, folks. You can get that from our website if you want to listen to it again. And he spent an hour explaining all of the things that they do here. And, of course, he in that office and other admissions office, anyone can really direct you and get you more information about those, too. And, of course, on the outside of it, first of all, a lot of people know that, especially with the name change, yes, we're going to be offering at least one, if not several, in the upcoming years, four-year degree under our own name.
That's right.
The first one, I think, we'll be starting to enroll students, or it'll be totally official in January 2016.
Right.
And that's in the Allied Health area.
No, it's in the culinary arts.
I'm sorry, of course it is. Culinary arts. And the one that we hope will be next is nursing.
Nursing and Allied Health. You're right. And we did get really good, high, and positive marks back from the accreditation group, the Higher Learning Commission again, that came on a separate visit to examine our culinary arts program. They were very pleased with what they saw. So that will be, it's already in motion. We have been allowed to announce that now. And probably in January, you're right, it'll be the first time we'll start to offer those 300-level classes. And so we're excited about that. That really fits really well with our university center, and we started that just a year ago. We have 3 partners so far. We'll add another 3, it looks like. And the 3 so far that are right on our campus, again, they have offices here. They offer classes right here on our main campus here in Dearborn. The latest one to sign up with us is Eastern Michigan University. And of course, one of their great areas is teacher preparation. So we already send about 500 of our students there every year as far as transfer. And so now they'll be able to stay here for some of those programs.
And the advantage is, I mean, they have to pay the regular tuition of these other four-year institutions, but they can stay here.
Yeah, they stay here. And it's a 3+1. So they commute. get to stay 3 years with us with our tuition and just 1 year with them.
Okay.
Right here on our campus.
Bad,
so it's really good. Siena Heights is another one. Great institution. And Madonna. One of the highlights of Madonna is with the criminal justice program. We already had a lot of transfer students going there anyhow, but now they'll be able to stay here
and finish that, again,
in 3+1. We already have good partnerships with University of Michigan, Dearborn right next door, and we'll probably be expanding some of those in the near future as well. So we treasure that partnership as well.
Well, we're getting to the really, really essential question now at the end of our time, and that is, tell us about your motorcycle.
Oh, well, it was a part of the opening day State of the College address, and yes, it was sort of a takeoff on our mascot, who's a hawk. We call him Hawkster, ostensibly stole my motorcycle, and so it was a little a treat for everybody, I think, to go around and see a lot of our campus buildings and the two campuses we have.
And we got to meet the Hawkster in person, too.
Yeah, the Hawkster was on stage. Yeah. And
that was a thrill.
So he was, I mean, the Hawkster actually isn't a he, but anyhow.
Not gender specific.
Nah, you know, that's what those masks are. They don't say much either. They don't have They don't have very good radio programs. So
no clear diction skills.
No. So we kind of brought him over here, and that he didn't work well.
My actual question is, and it is somewhat for someone in your position to be riding a motorcycle at all, and you're an older person, not as old as I am.
He's brutal.
Obviously, have you been a motorcyclist in the past?
I've had motorcycles for a long time. Not when I was a teenager, which was probably a wise thing, and. Mm-hmm. But as an adult, probably since my mid-20s, one time I had three motorcycles at once, and when I was president on Colorado, I had two, and I sold the one before coming here, and just have the old but reliable Honda, you know. Mm-hmm. And but it blows your hair back, and it's fun. Yeah. And
I trust you do wear a helmet, though.
Oh yes, I wear a helmet all the time. You bet. Well, no.
Because I a couple of weeks ago, the tragedy was in the papers about a recent graduate of Dearborn High School that died in a motorcycle accident. There's still some questions I have because the papers don't really go into details about that. I think they overemphasize how hazardous motorcycle riding can be, and it certainly can be. But I know in my early days here at Henry Ford, I rode a motorcycle in almost every day until the winter hit from Flat Rock, which is 30 miles south, 20 miles south, and really enjoyed it. But I took a Motorcycle Safety Foundation course, training course before, and it's very rigorous. We offer that on this campus every year.
Yes, that's right.
Although, and this year I saw them in the back parking lot for a couple of weeks. I don't know under whose... where the program is
we farm that out actually, but it is our program, so you can learn the safety, and we have a whole bunch of motorcycles. You don't even have to have one.
That's provided, and it's really the way to go, whether you're older or younger. If you're thinking of motorcycle, which does make a lot of sense, it's in good weather, it's much less expensive to operate, usually 50 or more miles to a gallon. See, some smaller cycles
that's what I get.
Like 80 or 90 miles to a gallon. So it's a great thing, and it really is safer than what most people think if you have the proper training.
That's right.
And you keep your motorcycle, of course, maintained properly.
Right.
One of the things the paper didn't mention was, did this young person actually get a motorcycle endorsement on his license? Because that would require a little more training.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not much, but it's a little road test in the back parking lot of Secretary of State here in Michigan. But it is something that is possible to do. In fact, I just saw a list from the AARP. All kinds of crazy stories on their website for very old people about things you need to do if you're a senior citizen. And in the top 10 was ride a motorcycle.
Yeah.
But of course, do it safely and do it properly.
Yes, of course.
Okay. So
it's a lot of fun. And, you know, I also have a little airplane, and I'm a pilot, have been a pilot for about 25 years.
Oh, wow.
And also, you know, there is some, of course, news coverage about, you know, car accidents, but they happen every day. But anytime a airplane has an accident, it's front page.
It's pretty
safe, but you got to be careful all the time.
Sure. But, what kind of plane is it? Single prop?
It's a single engine Cessna 172.
Oh,
it's
lovely.
Costs less than a used car, so it's not it's not a expensive model.
Well, it's great. A lot of fun. A lot of nice little airports in Michigan to go visit, you know, recreation areas, and you can escape all the crowded expressways.
In good
weather, anyway.
It is nice.
Because John was also asking, well, what are your hobbies? How do you escape the tendency? We already got the two big ones.
Great.
When you're loosening your tie, what are you? Activities you like to do?
The flying and the you know, motorcycle riding's fun, and my wife goes with me in the flying, so that's always even better. And those kind of things. I don't live on an acreage now. I live right here in Dearborn, but I've almost always lived on an acreage, so I always kind of did those kind of things. And as far as keeping up on things, I do have a big blue tractor stored in Iowa, so whenever I go back there, I get it out. You know,
play with the tractor.
So that's good therapy.
Yeah.
And you just move dirt that doesn't need moving, probably, and you know, and all those kind of things. But so those are some of it. you know, this is a you know secret, but I'm at advanced ages. I know, but I am taking drumming lessons. So I have a drum set, and so that's the newest passion, is trying to get the coordination of all four limbs, which is harder than you might think. So,
but these days, this is a note to parents: if they play a digital drum set, that the kids can wear headphones and they don't bother the rest of the family.
That's right. No, mine's a.
That's a big acoustic.
Mine's acoustical one. Yeah. We bother. Well, it's just my wife, but the dog doesn't seem to appreciate my practice at all.
I don't understand that. Oh well.
But that's a little bit.
I thought it was great. Just as a conclusion, that your State of the College address to us ended with pretty much all your VPs and yourself saying, "Hey, things are really on a good track now, and we're just going to keep doing it and keep expanding it and improving it." Is there one thing that in the next few months or next year that that you're really excited about jumping into or handling anew? I mean, it sounds like we just got to keep up with the track we're on, and we've got a lot of good initiatives going that we just have to fulfill.
Well, I'm very excited about the Culinary Arts four-year program getting started, the University Center continuing to expand. By the way, our Culinary Arts, 11 of our Culinary Arts students and one of our chefs just got back a couple weeks ago from China, and great exchange there. And so international students is another thing I think coming up we hope to get more of and be a part of that, and be monetarily as well as culturally enriching to our college. But you know, I think the other thing is planning the next strategic plan, and planning out with everybody getting involved the next 10 years, we'll say, and or however many years we want to stretch it to, and getting real clear about what we want to really become great at.
I know a lot of people on campus want to find out what we're going to do with the Child Activity Center building.
Yeah, we're going to have some
now
open
that we
forums.
Don't have that on campus anymore, although... Yeah. There's many ways that can be handled nearby with other facilities.
Yep.
That's a fancy little building. And,
it is. We're going to put that to great use. Not knowing exactly what yet, but it won't be long.
I think there's sort of idea session that's going to be on campus people can make their comments about.
Yeah, but get the input and harvest lots of ideas that people have. So.
That kind of involvement in here at this college, I mean, going back to 68, we've always had that kind of spirit here, and sometimes, of course, too many people talking about something can delay it an awfully long time from actually happening. I mean, so at certain points there have to be deadlines, you know, and cutoffs, and you got to move ahead.
Yeah.
And I think many people understand that around here, but we've started so many good things, we're just going to stay on the same track. And
there is a lot of
we'll
excitement.
Keep in touch.
We will. Thank you both very much.
Thank you very much. John.
Thank you for coming on the Journal today. President of Henry Ford College, Stan Jensen. So see you around campus, President.
Thank you.
And watch out for his motorcycle.
For today's report, I have a whole bunch of statistics for you. Wait, don't run away. Where are you going? Come back here and sit still while I drill these stats into your head. I realize that numbers can numb the brain, but this is a good story, and I promise that these statistics are easy to absorb. In fact, the number 400 pretty much sums it up. It's a story of political intrigue and corruption involving some of America's wealthiest families and corporations. Start with the Billionaire 400, a clique of the elite organized by the conniving Koch brothers. These ultra-rich right-wingers gather each winter in some warm-weather resort for a secretive, invitation-only retreat. There, they plot strategies and pledge money for electing politicos who will support their vision of corporate rule in America. For the 2016 elections, they've already committed nearly $1 billion to impose their vision of plutocracy over our democratic ideals, double the combined amount that the Republican and Democratic parties will spend. Then, there are the secretive super PACs that are sacking up tens of millions of dollars to back various presidential candidates. Again, a mere 400 corporations and rich families, each writing checks for hundreds of thousands and even millions of dollars, have put up nearly half of all the money in these electioneering committees. But now, here comes the antidote to this corruption of our politics by fat cats. Instead of being financed by 400 special interests, Bernie Sanders' campaign has raised its $15 million from 400,000 ordinary Americans. In fact, the average donation to Bernie is a heartwarming, soul-saving $31.30. This is Jim Hightower saying, you can't buy a president for 30 bucks, but you can help elect one who is not owned by big money. And isn't that the way it ought to be? Congratulations, Mr. and Ms. Middle Class America. You're all the rage in the present presidential contest. Jeb, Hillary, and all the rest, even the Donald, say their campaigns are all about you. Well, don't look now, but after each one promises that they'll do the most for the great mass of the middle class, they disappear into the shadows and scurry off to schmooze with a little group of Americans they truly love, the super rich, who are shoveling the big bucks into nearly every presidential pretender. More than half of the huge sums of campaign cash that have been funneled so far into the secretive super PACs of the Republican candidates has come not from regular folks, but from, get this, just 130 fat cats and the corporations they run. Jeb Bush got $1 million each from 26 of his super PAC backers. Hillary Clinton took $1 million each from 9 funders. Of the $16 million in Marco Rubio's PAC, 78% came from only 4 donors. And Ted Cruz got the most from the fewest, taking practically all of his $37 million from just 3 fat cat families. So, while candidates for the highest office in our land are soaking up applause for the grand rhetoric they're giving to the middle class, they're quietly sacking up millions of dollars by pledging their steadfast fealty to the ruling class. Donating millions is not an innocent or noble political transaction. Written on the backs of their checks is their corporate agenda, trumping the people's agenda. This is Jim Hightower saying, ironically, it's Donnie Trump, the bombastic billionaire, who candidly admits that these so-called gifts amount to the outright plutocratic purchase of politicians. He's long been a campaign donor in order to secure financial favors, he confesses, and it works. When I need something from them, they are there for me. There's a word for that, corruption. In their ongoing all-out assault to crush labor unions, corporate forces have fabricated a cultural myth to undermine popular support for labor. Unions, they insist, are no longer needed. They tell us that in today's entrepreneurial economy, workers must compete with each other, not cooperate. Before swallowing that wad of hornswoggle, let's revisit Flight 1549. As it took off from New York City in 2009, the jet hit a flock of geese, lost all power, and had nowhere to try a crash landing. But Captain Sully Sullenberger knew what to do. Use the Hudson River as a landing strip. Amazingly, it worked. Dubbed the Miracle on the Hudson, the lives of all 150 passengers were saved. But no supernatural powers were at work. Captain Sully himself is not only a member of the Airline Pilots Association, but also served on that union's National Governing Committee and was its former safety chairman. Indeed, he and the APA union have had to fight airline chieftains who keep trying to cut back on the safety training programs that teach crews how to save lives. Nor was Sully alone in this miracle. The cool-headed flight attendants, who quickly moved 150 nearly panicked people off the plane, were members of the Association of Flight Attendants, another union that trains to avert disasters. The ferry crews that zipped into action, skillfully maneuvering their boats within 4 inches of the plane's wings to rescue passengers, they're in the Seafarers International Union, which gives them the safety courses that enable them to respond as they did. The cops, firefighters, and air traffic controllers also perform marvelously, all union-trained. This is Jim Hightower saying, at a time when corporate interests in all sectors of our economy are trying to eliminate unions, remember Flight 1549, the union-made Miracle on the Hudson.
And we thank Jim Hightower's people for allowing that to be broadcast on WHFR, our non-commercial independent radio station in this area. And we hope those ideas give you ideas. And think about some of the things he said about money in politics and also about the place of the importance of unions. He raises some very good ideas. So John Conroy and myself are back with you now for the last 18 minutes or so of the new WHFR Journal for Friday, September 11th. And yes, we do know, doesn't everyone? that, of course, back in 2001, there was a terrible tragedy, and it was the day that terrorists attacked the United States using hijacked airplanes in a couple of different locations. Referring to Peace Almanac, though, which is a calendar of events from a different perspective, not glorifying or exaggerating moments of violence and cruelty, but trying to remember and go beyond it. Peace Almanac is part of the website worldbeyondwar.org, which is very stimulating, and it's certainly, you know, very different. For example, a lot of history classes have the idea that history is based on wars, one after the other. And, of course, the people that win the war are always the good people. Ever figure that one out? I always wondered why that happens that way. Because they don't talk about the wars that are won by bad people, I guess. Or they don't have the perspective on that. I'm sure that the war between the states, which is more recently called the Civil War, there's still a lot of people down south that don't feel that the right side won. We know that that's still true because of how difficult it is to eliminate the Confederate flag and what it represents from many public locations in the South. Anyway, September 11th, on this day in 1900, that's right, 1900, Gandhi, that's Mahatma Gandhi in India, launched Satyagraha. Now, that's a special concept that he developed of nonviolent civil disobedience. And the name itself, Satyagraha, means truth force, so that you can accomplish amazing things against people with weapons by not using weapons. Use the force of truth and civil disobedience. And he began that actually in Johannesburg. That's South Africa. That's where he first tested the concept after training people in this idea. Of course, eventually, by the late 1940s, he succeeded, and the British, with all their weapons, a big British Empire, all their people, in getting them out of India and actually freeing, if you want to call it, liberating India for the Indians. Not the American Indians, no. And it works. Okay, so it means that even without violence, you can win the day. You can liberate yourself from oppression. And that's it's amazing, but if you study it, I had some classes in college, I remember, where we had to read about Gandhi and India, and so we spent some time studying Satyagraha, and it's really amazing, and it does work. Does anybody suggest that we use Satyagraha against the terrorists? Not at this point, no. And that may be a whole different discussion. It's hard to say. Also on this same day, September 11th of 1973, the United States backed a coup that overthrew the democratically elected government of Chile. Yep, that's not a happy thought either. So they conclude from the Peace Almanac about today that on September 11th, this is a good day to oppose violence and nationalism and revenge. None of those things are really good because they lead to, well, death and destruction, unfortunately. And so just keep that in mind when other people are talking about the terrorists. I also have a long article here that appeared in The Nation, the magazine and the website, The Nation. And just read the title and the subtitle to you because it's four or five pages long. It's a very good argument. Tom Engelhardt is the author of it. And it's entitled 14 Years After 9/11, The War on Terror is Accomplishing Everything Bin Laden Hoped It Would. And the subtitle is Al-Qaeda Goaded Us Into Doing What It Had Neither the Resources Nor the Ability to Do, which is to have us curtail our own freedoms. The so-called Patriot Act, you know, I mean, big-time government surveillance of all of us, even though most all of us are not guilty of anything, but we lose our privacy. And yet, you know, how many terrorists are there in the world? There aren't that many, folks. In fact, if you look at the newspaper, you see there's more people in this country who aren't even associated with any particular religion or country other than the U.S., and they're shooting and killing people right and left. Even though, now I have to switch to this, it's important because it just came out on the website from a press conference from this last Tuesday, and you'll probably see it in the Press and Guide this Sunday. It's on their website now, pressandguide.com. Our Dearborn Police Chief, Ron Haddad, on Tuesday, gave his press conference about the statistics of crime in Dearborn. In the last year, and they recorded from August to August, so August 2014 to August 2015, 4,774 crimes, that's all types, big and little, occurred in Dearborn. The previous year, 2013 to 2014, it was 4,944. So that's, you can say in general, crime is down about 3.5% in the city of Dearborn. And I have to tell you that with very few exceptions in the United States, crime is down everywhere, big and little. So, you know, any politician running for office on the fact that we've got to stop all the crime, or there's all those rapists coming in from certain other countries, those are horrible exaggerations, but the crime statistics are down pretty much everywhere. As I said, there are certain cities, certain communities where that's not true, but there must be a lot of reasons nationally why crime is decreasing. But certainly we're happy in Dearborn, and we have the numbers, that it went down 3.5%. What does Chief Haddad say was responsible for that? He calls it intelligence-based policing. So naive I am. I thought all policing should be, anyway, and I thought it was, intelligence-based. Because what's the alternative? Stupidity-based? Or ignorance-based? I don't think that's the good alternative here, and he wasn't implying that that ever happens anywhere. But his idea is that they use the best information and best data. That's the intelligence. That is finding out where they need to help people the most, and they deploy their people according to that information, not just, you know, one cop for every two streets or something, and that's your beat, you know. Well, maybe that one cop isn't enough. I mean, you know, and of course he has said that they have some special teams. They're called tag teams, not SWAT teams, but the tag team units work throughout the day. And the units are made up of 15 specially trained uniform officers and one team of 5 plainclothes officers. Ooh, they'll blend right in, right? And they focus on data evaluation, serial crimes, and high visibility within the community. And they're also deployed in crime hot zones on a daily basis, so they can identify where the issues are and they can follow through with them. So they're actually going where most needed, even though they're also giving the same, you know, service and coverage elsewhere too. So somehow, this is unfortunate because I think our police officers deserve all the money they can get, but this program and other programs are helped because there's a new agreement with the Dearborn Police Officer Associations. So every officer in the department will be working 4 extra hours a week to help make these rotations and patrol and so on work. So does it, 44 hours a week? What did they start with, 40 or 36? Or, in a way, it's difficult, sometimes hazardous duty. So I don't know what the normal number of days in a week there is for a police officer. I would think if it's 40 hours a week, there's times that even patrol cops have to come back to the station and receive training and instruction and write up those reports. Oh, boy. So they also started a new program called Next Door, which I don't have time to explain on this show today. And he also gave in the press conference, which I can't, and it's in the story, you can read about details on some ongoing high-profile crimes. And it was the media made a big deal about 3 or 4 of them, and so he wanted to tell the media, and in the paper here it is too, what progress they're making on that. They are, of course, always working on the high-profile ones, but it's the low-profile ones I think the average person is concerned about, because that's what usually hits them up. Of course, you can always dial 911 to get help from the police department, but they do suggest also, if it's just suspicious activity, if you're not sure that something bad is happening, Something doesn't look right to you, whether it's theft or drug dealing or whatever you think it might be, report it. And that number is actually a regular phone number, 313-943, which is kind of a common City of Dearborn extension, 943-3030. I wish there was an easy way to remember what that means, but there's the 30-06 caliber rifle. No. 2020 is your vision. So 30-30 means you're really watching carefully what's going on. That's great magnification. So if you're watching carefully what's going on in your neighborhood or even on the highway and you think there's something suspicious happening that the police should investigate, there's nothing wrong with calling them, and they have the team that can assess the issue and investigate as needed. 313-943-3030. Okay. Oh, my goodness. Tomorrow is free shredding day. We're getting down to the bottom of the pile for stories, John. so if you have documents, people, they recommend that if you value your privacy and you don't want to be hacked or have your accounts used by other people charging money on your credit card or whatever, before you throw out your credit card receipts or your credit bills or any other documents like that, they should be shredded. And there's inexpensive machines you can buy, $30-$40, but the city actually does provide that service. I think it's once a year, and it's tomorrow, Saturday, September 12th, at the City of Dearborn DPW Yard, which is Greenfield Road just south of Rotunda, also just south of the I-94 overpass there. It's open to Dearborn residents only. You have to prove residency, and a limit per person of 5 office-sized boxes of personal paper documents and a maximum weight. And they don't say if it's a maximum weight per box or total. I don't know, but it's probably per box of 50 pounds. Paper is heavy. It really is. So, yes. Thank you very much, John. We're preparing for Joanne Korchinska's arrival in Highway 61 to get started. And John, of course, will be back with me again next Friday, but he's going to be assisting Joanne and getting her into the studio. Tout suite, as the French would say. Isn't that a cute phrase, tout suite? Yeah, sort of means straight ahead. Okay. And by the way, the DPW yard will not be open for any other services tomorrow from 8 a.m. to noon or maybe at all. There was an Elderfest. It's interesting. City of Dearborn only got the official word out about Elderfest yesterday morning. And it was yesterday in the morning from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. That's when they're e-newsletter went out, and I didn't see anything in the papers about it either. But I hope the seniors had a great time at Ford Field from 10 to 3. Okay. The Historical Museum, relies on contributions pretty much to survive here in Dearborn. The Dearborn Historical Museum's giving their third annual beer tasting and barbecue fundraiser on Friday, September 25th, so 2 weeks from today. The event is 5 to 11 p.m. at the McFadden Ross House grounds, 915 Brady in West Dearborn. $10 ticket includes admission, souvenir glass mug, and one free glass of beer, wine, or root beer, whatever you prefer. Participating vendors include a lot of local brewers and some big names, like A&W is going to be there for the root beer. And also, you will find food, because it can have food trucks from Smoky Roads Barbecue, Rolling Stone Fired Pizza, and the Rolling Stones Stoves food truck. So there's the Rolling Stone Fired Pizza and the Rolling Stoves food truck. That'll be, of course, you'll have to pay money for that. There'll be live entertainment, too, free parking at the museum and Ford Field Park. There's a free shuttle service to and from Ford Field. You can get your tickets in advance at the museum office, online at thedhm.com, the DHM, the Dearborn Historical Museum, the DHM.com, or at the door. And all the proceeds go to the Dearborn Historical Museum, and it's a very important cause, whether or not you want to taste beer or go to the event. They deserve your support as one of our great local nonprofit charities. The others, of course, are too numerous to mention, but I'll mention, the Dearborn Animal Shelter and Henry Ford College's own WHFR. That's right, because we don't get full funding from Henry Ford College. We depend on nonprofit contributions. And we have a lot of events coming up here in the next couple of months, in fact, that you could be part of, and you could help us out by attending, having fun, as well as contributing money to us. For example, the big one coming up in October, and it is, I'm just reaching here for the flyer about it, the record show. It's our 8th annual record show featuring thousands of records, CDs, videos, and other music memorabilia. It's all for sale by independent, local, and out-of-state vendors, real high-quality vendors, and some local people, too, who've got some really special stuff. And you can find out more by going to our website, whfr.fm/recordshow. Okay. It will be Saturday, October 24th. So I know it's a month away, but circle that Saturday's date. I am told it is not a U of M homecoming game. Okay. It might be homecoming. It's not the U of M MSU game, which is a big deal, because sometimes people would be glued to their TV sets all day long waiting for that to happen and watching it. It'll be from 9 a.m. in the morning until 4 p.m. in the evening at our main campus here at Henry Ford College. So WHFR 8th annual record show. It's going to be a great, great time. There will be some live music and just a great time. Well, live music if people play music from their booth, of course. Yeah. Great. Metro Times is out there. It is about 2 o'clock now, and it is time to say that this is WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves, WHFR.fm, of course. This time, just continuing for a few moments as Highway 61 gets up to speed here. This week in the Metro Times, there's an editorial by Jack Lessenberry that reinforces and supports what I was saying a couple weeks ago about the terrible hazard to this area with nuclear contamination to our water. Now, it's bad enough that we have the Monroe plant, the Fermi plant there, in lockdown, if you want to call it. It's closed. It had a near meltdown back in the late 60s, or was it early 70s? And it's still very, very dangerous. Its containment shell has pressurized liquid sodium and plutonium contamination. That's the radioactive part. And so if that containment shell ruptures anytime in the next 100 or 200,000 years, and if there's not a stiff wind blowing at the time in only one direction, that is out to the lake, then Detroit and Toledo will be uninhabitable for about 50,000 years. That's right. That's the danger of that. But a lot of these other nuclear facilities, like the one just east of Lake St. Clair in Canada, in Ontario, has great problems in storage. And they've got open pools right now that if they don't keep the water circulating, there'll be a meltdown of the radioactive elements into the soil. And since the new planned burial site will even be deeper into the soil, it with a little teeny earthquake, and we have little teeny earthquakes all the time around this basin, nothing major, thank goodness, it could rupture at some point in the future and contaminate Lake St. Clair and all of our water supply, and therefore, even though we're not